as we just heard from Lou Elizondo, a heck of a lot has happened in just 3 years' time on the UFO UAP subject. The task force is now operative, is going to expand its operations, hopefully, with its budget intact. Lou Elizondo believes we need a permanent, broad-based program to get to the bottom of this. There was a much broader-based program at one point. It was a contract put out called OSAP, and it was sort of the precursor to ATIP, the program that Lou managed for a while. OSAP got into some pretty strange territory. It cast a very wide net. And the question would be, can we resolve these ultimate mysteries by studying just military encounters, you know, encounters with the unknown that involve U.S. military cases, or does it have to have a broader focus, even at the risk of getting into some topics that might be too uncomfortable for people at the Pentagon? We're going to get into that, as well as the future of TTSA, right after this on Coast to Coast AM. So, Lou, you were talking about the need for sort of a permanent, well-funded, broad-based program to get to the bottom of this. Let me ask you this. OSAP, which you interacted with the OSAP folks, that was a those folks cast a very wide net. They looked into topics and incidents involving much more than military encounters with unknown aircraft. And some of those topics and incidents that they investigated made people uncomfortable because they're just too darn weird. Can you get to the bottom of the ultimate mystery and resolve the really big questions here without delving into some of the peripheral types of issues by only focusing on military type encounters?
No, George, I don't think you can, but let's not forget that the constraints we're under when we work in something, an organization like the Department of Defense, there are necessary limitations on what you can and can't do. For example, when I was in the Department of Defense, I couldn't just go out and talk to private civilian pilots and get information from them. That would have been a violation of our authorities. You know, there's other organizations that were charged with doing that type of stuff. So do I think that we can only rely on military witnesses? No. But I also think there's a tremendous, and that's why I think, not to skip ahead here, but in our last season of Unidentified with History Channel, we started talking to commercial pilots, airline pilots, because they're trained observers too, and they're flying the skies just as much, if not more, than some of even our Navy and Air Force personnel are doing. But it does give you an extra degree, if you will, of confirmation, because a lot of these military individuals are accompanied by military weapon systems and surveillance systems. So whereas a private citizen sitting on their back porch seeing something very interesting is one thing, a military pilot is basically flying a weapon system and a intelligence collection platform all at the same time. So they have at their disposal more, if you will, in their toolkit to collect information and data that can help us better understand the characteristics of these UAPs. I know I'm not really answering your question about OSAP, and I'm deliberately skirting that because really the people that were involved were all in OSAP. Although I was involved tangentially, I wasn't in a position of authority regarding the OSAP aspect. And the individuals that were part of that, I know personally, they are outstanding human beings, and they are no-nonsense individuals. And for their reasons, they decided to cast a very wide net, and that's probably out of due diligence. They probably were, we really didn't have a very good understanding of what we were dealing with. So rather than, look through a straw, if you will, at a target, through a scope, you first need to find the target. So you need to, you need to first identify it. And so typically you want to cast a wide beam of light, so to speak, so you can first see what it is you're looking for. And then, of course, you can focus in later on with a scope, if you will. ATIP was more of a scope, right? You're looking at your target through a scope. It's a very defined target, whereas OSAP was certainly broader than that.
If a permanent, well-funded program were established, something even bigger than the task force, would you go back if they ask you to? And I ask it in the context of there's a lot of stories floating around about TTSA, so that'll be the second half of the question. But would you go back under the right circumstances, or are you done with that?
Well, George, I'm not sure I ever really left. You know, let me ask you this. Does one have to wear a uniform to be a patriot? You know, do you have to fly an American flag to be an American? No, you don't. I think if I was asked to, quote unquote, come back in a government capacity, it would first be a discussion I'd have to have with my family. Then probably the very second person would be Senator Harry Reid. And then the third person would be Chris Mellon. And I'd have the conversation with them and ask them what they think. And at some point, you know, if I were to go back, I will tell you this. If I were to go back and I agreed to do it, I would ensure first and foremost transparency was our number one priority. And transparency includes not only our government and our allies, but it includes the American people. I think people could expect a significant and seismic change if I were to ever enter government service again in an official capacity like that. You know, I would probably do things a little bit differently than we did before. I would first of all demand that the restrictions that we had in place and the taboo and whatnot would be eliminated. I would break down those barriers probably with a sledgehammer, because those were the very barriers that were stopping us from really having any additional progress in this area.
Well, I've heard stories from people who under the previous programs have knocked on certain doors and had the doors slammed in their face. If you had superpowers and you could kick in those doors, would you know where to look for pockets of evidence, for storehouses of information and proof?
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly where I'd go. And first of all, there wouldn't be any doors at all. There probably wouldn't even be any walls either. You know, I'm not sure if that's such a good idea, but, you know, I have a very good idea of what I would do to improve the process of the system in very, very short order. I'm not a politician. I'm not very political. I'm an operator. I'm kind of a point-and-click kind of guy. So if I were to ever to go back, first of all, I'd have to be asked to go back, and second of all, I'd have to agree to it. But if I did, those terms and conditions would be very specific. I would be, first of all, I would only take that job if I was given the authorities to do the things necessary that I would need to do. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. It's a complete waste of time.
What's going on with TTSA? There's these rumors floating around that an announcement is coming in January that's going to shake things up a bit. What if anything can you say about it?
Well, I can't speak for TTSA. You'd have to go through TTSA channels to ask them about TTSA. And I'll tell you from my perspective, look, I love my friends at TTSA. They're incredible human beings. But I also have to say, you know, my mission has always been very clear, George, and that was to push disclosure forward. That's it. And I think after 3 years, you know, I can look back and I think we've achieved much of what we've set out to do. TTSA, it's no secret, also focuses on its entertainment division. And, you know, let's face it, guys like Chris Mellon and Steve Justice and myself, we're not entertainers. We're not. So very much like the History Channel project, we have accomplished our mission success. We have done more in 3 years collectively than I think anybody really expected us to achieve. Now it's time, I think, we shift from, you know, it's like a car, right? You know, I speak of car talk. I'm kind of a gearhead. So I think the time has come we shift from the proverbial first gear to now second gear. We have enough momentum, enough inertia where we can shift gears and continue moving forward. And to do that, guys like me are looking at new and exciting ways to expand the conversation to an even larger audience while still staying true to our core mission of disclosure.
I think I understand what you said there. Let me ask you this. One of the key things that TTSA has been working on and arranged was this amazing, unexpected agreement with the U.S. Army to study certain materials. that have been recovered. Haven't heard anything about that. Can you say anything about where that stands? Have any breakthroughs been made? Are any announcements coming about materials?
Well, you'd have to inquire directly with GTSA. I'm certainly not on the board, and so I can't make any proclamations. But like any relationship between two people, it takes two to tango. And even GTSA, I don't think can really answer that question by itself. You'd have to go to the Army. The agreement between GTSA and the United States Army was certainly a very unique relationship, and that relationship still exists. But in order to talk about that, it's really not fair to do that without having the Army also involved in that conversation. So out of respect for the Army, out of respect for GTSA, I'm going to politely punt that that question. But I also, if I can, George, just for a second, I think the one thing I've noticed a lot of people, some of their criticism towards me tends to be that, Lou really never has anything new to say, right? He's just, kind of talks vague and innuendos and doesn't really say anything. But the real reason why I don't is, first of all, out of respect for other parties, but two, it's also because I'm very busy working these issues behind the scenes. I've never been a kiss and tell kind of guy. I prefer action over words. So a lot of what I do is really working in the shadows and doing what I do best. And, one of my reasons, frankly, for being in Washington, D.C. This time. I'm extremely engaged in the work that I'm doing right now. I'm not just sitting on my laurels and pontificating on wouldn't it be great if. We actually have very specific goals that we are in the process of achieving that will, of course, in time be made very public.
The task force, I'm somewhat familiar with what goes on there. They can't talk to me directly or anything like that, but it seems like their hearts are in the right place. There is no secrecy for its own sake. You have military folks that you've worked with, I'm sure, who would keep everything secret, never tell anyone anything. I think that there are personnel there that would like to share with the public and help us all understand these gigantic mysteries that are unfolding around us. But what I've heard as feedback indirectly is you can't tell your friends without telling your enemies, that there is genuine concern about releasing information to the American public that would then be helpful to our adversaries around the world about how these things work, that there is a race for this technology, that we want to get there first. Can you comment in general about that? A lot of us are hoping, a lot of folks hoping for some kind of capital D disclosure. I am not holding my breath for that for a variety of reasons, but there are those who want it, expect it, and in some ways, if you talk to the people on the front lines, it is not realistic.
Yeah, well, again, as I said before, I think we need to tamper down our expectations. We all have a different definition of what success looks like. So first of all, we all have to agree what success means. And, for some, it's an announcement by the president saying these things are real. For others, it's, something landing on the White House lawn. And yet for others, it's, an acknowledgement by the world that, maybe someone like the UN and the nations that we've been in contact. Who knows? I mean, everybody has a different goalpost for what disclosure means. As far as the task force is concerned, these folks are people that are working very, very hard trying to give the American people what they want. But the problem is you can't. It's like talking to your, trying to whisper a secret to your friends using a bullhorn. It doesn't work. And so there's no way to have a private conversation with the American people about the UAP topic and some of the nuanced aspects of it without letting your foreign adversaries know, your competition, if you will, know what you're doing. It's impossible. You can't have that conversation with 500 million people and it not, get into the wrong ears. And this is, you're right, there are other countries that are in this race with us, and some are not necessarily sympathetic to, to our cause. They have their own interests at heart, like many countries do. It's not no surprise, right? So there's an old saying, countries have interests, not friends. And so thus is the way of the world. So how do you have an open conversation with the American people while ensuring it doesn't get into the wrong circles, you know, regarding your adversaries? Well, again, you can't. So therein lies the balance. When I was working at the DNI at the time, an incredible human being, Jim Clapper, who was the Director of National Intelligence, and before that he was the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, he had this saying, you know, how do you balance this need to provide information with this need to protect? And it's tough. You have to find a balance where you share enough information where it's useful, but not so much information where it becomes detrimental. And it's a balance. And that scale is constantly moving. It's not a static scale. It's constantly in motion, and it's difficult. And you know, there's no real perfect science to do that. There's no instruction book on how you tell the American people the reality about UFOs while ensuring, you know, your foreign adversaries don't get a leg up on you and find out how much you know. Because the last thing we want to do is allow our foreign adversaries to know what we do know, and even worse, what we don't know about the phenomenon.
You and Senator Reid and others have made public statements to me and in other interviews about Russia and China, about their ongoing interest in these same topics, about their own research programs. Have you seen any indications that they have made progress, that they are spying on us and trying to figure out what we know, or that they've made any breakthroughs? And I ask it in this context. Russia has made some incredibly provocative moves over the last couple of years, military moves, close encounters, sort of very provocative, almost daring us to take action. And I just didn't know if they had something up their sleeve along these lines. Do you have any indication of that?
Well, first of all, the Russians are masters at three-dimensional chess. And unfortunately, oftentimes, you know, we're not even playing checkers against them. We're playing Connect Four. Part of that is because of our political cycle. Everything works in kind of a four-year cycle. And, you know, quite frequently we get this whipsaw effect, whether it's on a conservative side or liberal side, and agendas change very, very quickly. It's very fluid. Whereas the Russians tend to have a 20-year, 30-year, 40-year outlook on their national strategy. So to some degree, they have a more consistent approach to achieving their goals. It's not necessarily better. It's just, you know, in some cases, more consistent. As it relates to the UAP topic, I'm going to be very careful how I approach this, because I don't know how to really discuss it without saying something I shouldn't. But I think it's fair to say that the Russians are always, any adversary, right, just like we are, always looking for an advantage over our adversary, trying to find the information gaps. Where are those information gaps? Where are those critical areas where there's a fundamental lack of understanding about something? And Russia is no different. They're no different than China. They're no different than us. They're no different than anybody else. And frankly, they are very capable, and they are extremely sophisticated.
Well, as we've seen in the last couple of days, this massive, terribly effective hack that they carried out. Anyway, we're talking with Lou Elizondo about UFOs, UAPs, the UAP task force, disclosure of progress that might be made over the next couple of years. And we're going to go to a break. We'll open up the phones coming up so you can ask Lou a couple of questions. We're talking with the one and only Lou Elizondo, who managed ATIP, went to work for TTSA, is the star of his own TV series Unidentified on the History Channel. I'm going to ask him about the future of that series and what comes next. And I want to go back to the topic of metamaterials. They've been discussed publicly by some of the folks who've done the investigations. If you're looking for physical evidence of something pretty strange, something from somewhere else, the materials science arena might be the place to find it. We'll be right back, and we'll take some of your calls for my guest here on Coast to Coast AM. Lou, I remember the first time I got to see a glimpse of the Tic Tac and Gimbal and Go Fast videos. It was 2 days after you were on that stage announcing the creation of To the Stars Academy. You and Tom DeLonge came to Las Vegas, and I got a peek. And then, remember, you know, those videos clearly made a difference in convincing the New York Times that this was a story worth covering. You still see, you know, I guess on Twitter, if you spend much time there, and I guess you do sometimes, you still see people who, I guess they've pretty much given up on the it's just glare or it's seagulls, but they haven't given up on the idea that these are our projects, secret projects that were unveiled to the Nimitz carrier group as a test to see how our pilots might react. You know, you talk to somebody like Dave Fravor, who says, that's not ours. We didn't build it. We don't have that technology. And yet, you know, people are still going to make that argument. They'll never believe it. And I suppose the same would be true if the video that we're talking about of this triangle coming out of the ocean, they wouldn't accept that either. What do you say to them? Or do you even bother to make that argument anymore?
Well, no, I say that's okay. You know, I think that's what makes social media so wonderful. I think, you know, I think some people may have earlier misinterpreted when I say, you know, talked about social media. Social media isn't bad. Social media is actually, it's a good thing. The problem is that some individuals on it, you know, don't necessarily do good things on it. You know, so I let me first clarify that. So by anybody out there, you know, I really do appreciate sincerely UFO Twitter. It's an amazing platform, and I would make the recommendation for anybody who wants to learn about this topic to jump in with both feet. There's really some incredible minds on UFO Twitter, and you're right, they don't always agree. In fact, rarely do they all agree, and that's okay because it's not about consensus. We're talking about, you know, perhaps one of the most profound phenomena that mankind has faced since we crawled out of caves. And so I don't expect consensus. You know, heck, I don't have the answers. So I'm not sure it's realistic for us to expect everybody to come on there. And yes, there's people there that will say, you know, these things are seagulls or baboons or whatever. And I think their opinion is just as worthy and as important as everybody else's. What I disagree with, George, is the stifling of opinions where people say as fact, that is this, that is that. That is the problem, because we don't know. And at the end of the day, the data has to speak for itself. I mean, clearly, I don't think we waste millions of dollars of taxpayer dollars trying to track down a seagull that way. I think that's absurd. But I also think people are entitled to their opinion. And if somebody wants to propose that it's a seagull, I think we need to listen until the data suggests otherwise. I'm okay with that. And my real issue with it are those that are agent provocateurs. They're not really interested in the truth. They're not really interested in the conversation. They're just interested in having an argument. And that's really what I don't like to entertain. What do I have to say for those individuals? Well, I think I'd say go get a hobby. You know, if you think you can do a better job, then be my guest and please step up to the plate, because you know, the last 70 years have gone so well so far on disclosure. So that would be my advice.
I wanted to ask about metamaterials, but I have a feeling we have a caller on the phone that's going to ask about a question that leads there anyway. We're going to go to, on the wildcard line, we're going to go to Joe in Las Vegas. I think I know who this guy is. Hey, Joe.
Hey, George. How you doing, Luke?
How's it going?
To speak with you.
Hey, Joe.
October of 2002, former director of the DIA, Admiral Thomas Wilson, allegedly met with astrophysicist Dr. Eric Davis, who I know you know well because he worked underneath you, and they allegedly discussed Wilson being shot out of a special access program that dealt with an intact craft that was not of the Earth, not of this Earth, and not made by human hands. So when and how did you first hear about the Wilson-Davis documents, and what's your opinion of them?
Okay, so first let me, Joe, start by answering your question by saying I've had the honor and privilege of knowing Eric Davis personally. He is of impeccable character. And if you know him personally, you realize that it's, we actually laugh about it. It's almost impossible for this guy to lie. lie. I think if you were to put a you know, a knife to his throat and say lie, he probably wouldn't be able to do it. It's just the kind of guy he is. I've known him personally and for quite some time of his work and, of course, him as an individual. So I have 100% faith and confidence in what he and or Hal Prudhoff have to say. I wasn't there for the Wilson incident. I will tell you that it has happened where very senior people are not briefed into certain topics. Look, I'm living proof of it. I was an agent, and there were people in my chain of command that were not briefed into the program. And really didn't matter how senior they were. If you weren't on the list, you weren't getting briefed, period. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. So is it unfathomable to think that somebody of Admiral Wilson's stature wouldn't be briefed into a SAP? No, it's not. I think if you were to talk to Chris Mellon, he would tell you for the first 6 months of him and I talking, he didn't know anything about what we were doing. I think he speculated, but he wasn't brought in behind the green curtain. Now, do I believe, quote unquote, the details in the document? I don't know, because I don't know the provenance of that document. I haven't asked Eric anything about Dr. Davis or Hal about the Wilson documents, because frankly, it's not really my business. It occurred at a time that I was not engaged in this topic. And I figure if they want to tell me, they can tell me. But I'm not going to ask, and I haven't asked. And that's really out of respect for our friendship. They have seemed a little bit uncomfortable addressing the topic. So as a friend, I'm not going to put them in the situation where they're going to have to answer that question. It's just out of respect for them. And I mean it sincerely. I haven't asked them any details about it. You can ask them yourself. It's just to respect me, just because they're my colleagues, my friends. And, you know, I figured if they wanted to tell me, they would tell me. Otherwise, you know, I know how to mind my own. I know how to mind my own business.
Thanks, Joe. Let me ask you this, Lou, back to Meta Materials. Have you held any materials yourself in your own hand that is undergoing some sort of analysis that is of unknown origin?
Damn, George. sorry.
Well, you're not saying it's alien. It's just, you know, there are pieces that have been discussed, you know. Hal put off your colleague.
Okay. If you put in that context, yes.
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
In a public presentation, yeah. In a public presentation here in Las Vegas, Dr. Putoff, a friend of yours and mine, mentioned that some pieces of material from crash sites had been retrieved and were being analyzed. And Tom DeLong had hinted that that was part of the agreement that was undertaken with the Army, that some materials are being studied. Doesn't mean it's alien or extraterrestrial, it's just that we don't know how it's made exactly. So maybe in that context, can you say anything else about it?
We spent a lot of time collecting a lot of information and stuff. And that stuff, data can sometimes come in all sorts of different forms. It's not just information. Sometimes it's, you know, it's material. Any good investigator would tell you, evidence is key. You know, you go to the scene of a crime and you want to collect as much evidence as you can. So I guess to put it succinctly, to answer your question, yeah. I guess.
Well, that could be a breakthrough, right? I mean, if say, a sample, look, we don't know how this was engineered, and that is confirmed by someone, that would be a pretty substantial breakthrough, I would think, on this topic.
Well, of course. One of our dear friends and somebody who is extremely respected in the field is Mr. Jacques Vallée. He's been doing this probably before since I was even alive. And he said for the record, in fact, I think it was also in that movie, The Phenomenon, that I mentioned before by James Fox and Dan Farrow, where he talks about it on camera, that they are absolutely analyzing very unique material that has a very interesting isotopic arrangement But I don't want to speak for Jacques and his studies. You know, I can only speak from my own experience. But I think, you know, that would be a great question to bring up to Mr. Valet.
Yeah, I think I saw an announcement that he's got a book coming out that looks at that, focuses on that. Sometime in the spring it'll be coming out, so hopefully we'll get him back on here. What about the TV show? Where do things stand?
Well, you know, like I said, we Chris Mellon and I, you know, we've accomplished our mission with History Channel. We now have it to a point where the conversation can be had by mainstream media and our leaders in governments, and people don't have to be ashamed to have the conversation. Military people are coming out, private citizens are coming out of the woodwork to have the conversation. The task force has been established. So, you know, I think the time has come for us to shift into second gear. Now, what that second gear looks like, you know, I certainly don't want to put the cart before the horse in this case, but there are several things we're looking at that will take this conversation truly to the global stage. History Channel was very good bringing it to bringing the conversation to the American audience. But, you know, let's face it, there's a whole lot of people that live on this planet, and only 500 million or so, you know, live in the U.S. And they're facing the same challenges, you know, we're facing regarding this topic, this phenomenon. So perhaps it's time that we take this conversation truly global to the international stage.
All right. Well, that's some pretty dramatic clues there. You let us know when you're ready to make a formal announcement. You have an open invitation. I'll try to get another call or two in. East of the Rockies, Jay in Baltimore. Hi, Jay.
Hi, George and Lou. Very interesting show. I got two quick questions for Lou. Did you ever make any inquiries as to actual craft recovery, such as Roswell, where there's, you know, a pretty substantial paper trail and testimony from retired, post-retirement high-ranking individuals like General Ramey, General Arthur Exon, and even Jesse Marcel Sr., who was actually on the ground? Any inquiries into that area?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and so I guess there might be something there that you probably can't talk about. How about the next question, where less of a political football for Congress would be perhaps if they can offer some kind of total amnesty for somebody who wants to come forward to a task force, or somebody who's currently working, you know, deep within on a project, perhaps working with hardware, if they wanted to come forward to a task force and be, you know, immune to prosecution, you know, from their security clearance on this subject. You ever think something like that may be possible?
Jay, that is an absolute fantastic question, and that is precisely what we're trying to figure out. How do we create a safe environment where the individuals who may have been previously involved in similar efforts, rather than being, living in fear of some sort of prosecution, can come back under the tent and can work with us. And there's many different ways to do that. There's administrative mechanisms available. It's not necessarily an amnesty type thing, but yeah, something similar where you could create it where, you know, you're not going to jeopardize someone's career to come back. The problem is when you're talking about amnesty, you know, you can that only covers so far. There's nothing stopping somebody in the private sector from launching a lawsuit against anybody, even if it's frivolous. So there's no way to truly indemnify or insulate people who may have been involved in a previous effort completely. There still may be some liability there, and you know, those are going to be pretty tricky to navigate. You know, it's you could probably eliminate the chances of some sort of federal prosecution, but you really can't protect everybody from, you know, any type of legal action. So therein lies the devil in the details. How do we create a safe environment where people will want to come under the tent and work in a collegial manner and, you know, give up their rice bowls to you know, try to pursue this incredible mystery and try to you know, share some of the information that maybe they have gleaned in the past. Great question.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. Lou, I guess I'm trying to figure out where to how to wrap this up, and then we got about 2 minutes left. What you'd like people to understand about the topic, what comes next, not just for you, but I mean for the study of it. I mean, are you encouraged by what could happen in 2021? And I ask it, let me add this as a qualifier. General Mattis is a special place in your life. You respect him. He played a key role in you still being around here. He left his service to the president, and I don't know if you ever got a chance to have the conversation with him that you wanted to have. Have you had that conversation, and do you think if you haven't, will you be able to in the future?
You know, I certainly, you know, I don't like to speak for other people, George, and Jim Mattis certainly is somebody who I would never pretend to speak for. This is an individual who I have a profound degree of respect for. I don't care what your political leanings are. The man is an absolute hero. I've seen him, you know, in the heat of battle, and he has saved countless lives. He's truly, by definition, one of the greatest American heroes we've had, certainly in my lifetime. And I can say that with confidence. I am pretty sure he knows the situation. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but there were senior people that worked in and around him that I personally briefed on a regular routine basis. And I know that when I resigned, when he was eventually told, you know, it was a bit of a surprise for him. How he feels now about the topic, that's really something you would have to ask him.
Well, the thing is, there's so much going on. He's probably got a lot of other things on his plate right now, as the whole world does. You know, it's a tumultuous time. So UAPs are pretty high on my list, but there might be some things higher on his list than you and I having this conversation.
Well, George, if I can just take a minute, I know you're going to have to, you know, turn me off here in a minute, but I would like to just take a moment too. And I'm not sure your listeners know just how much you have been part of this effort. You know, you have been diligently also working behind the scenes. And a lot of people, I'm not sure, really appreciate how much you have been key to this process over the last 3 years. You know, I think it's easy for people to just say, oh, yeah, George Knapp is a great reporter. But you're much more than that. And I think, you know, at some point, you know, our fellow Americans are going to owe you a great deal of gratitude for the work you're doing and the work you've done in the past. I know through colleagues that I've worked with that really you were very instrumental in helping this conversation take place at many different levels.
I appreciate that, Lou. It's always great to talk to you. Please let us know what comes next for you when you get a chance, and we'll talk to you soon.